You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Carlson loads up. Shot
scores! Nelson angles the puck, slides it for Palmieri. He scores! Kyle Palmieri!
Somebody's throwing something on the floor. It's a chicken wing. Why would someone throw something that good out on the floor?
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Good morning. This is Jason Brough. This is Jason Brough's voice. This is not Mike Halford's voice.
Uh-oh. Explain.
What's going on here?
I think Mike's
going
to be a couple minutes late. Good morning, everyone. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec.
Oh, yeah. Actually, you know what? That was still better than Halford did. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. The official automotive sponsor of Halford and Brough is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. We are in hour one. Vancouver's premier metal recycler, Northstar Metal Recycling, pays the highest prices on scrap metal. Northstar Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. 1170 Powell Street. Good morning, A-Dog.
Good morning.
Good morning, Laddie.
So nice Hello. Of you to show up on time. It's very professional.
Yeah. I mean, this is, Halford's put me in a real tough spot here. Yep. I got to do all those reads. Actually, you know what? Wasn't that hard.
No.
Wasn't that hard. Halford makes it kind of seem difficult. And then it'll be like, it's a big show today, even if it's like the exact same show we have every Friday. Luke Gazdick is going to
sell it. Sizzle.
Yeah, Luke Gazdick's going to join us at 6:30 to talk a little NHL. AJ from AJ's Pizza at 7 o'clock. Jason Greger at 7:30 to give us the Edmonton side of things as the Canucks approach their huge game against the Edmonton Oilers on Saturday. First place in the division, not exactly on the line, but the Canucks can go a long, long way towards clinching first place in the division if they win that game. Do they actually clinch? We go through this all the time. Like, do they actually clinch with a win? Officially clinch? Probably know this. Halford would know this, but he's not here. We'll talk to Jason Greger at 7:30 about that. And Rick Dhaliwal at 8 o'clock. Best Ask Us Anything on Ask Us Anything Friday on the Halford and Brough Show. $100 gift card to AJ's Pizza. And then he does something like, without further ado, let's get into what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
So we've actually got an Ask Us Anything from Three Putt Shame between Mike and Jason. Who is generally first into the studio? Well, I guess it's me, although it's usually Mike.
We do have a bit of business, actually. What
and
happened?
Who generally leaves first? I know.
Okay, you're going to get
who
to,
generally leaves first? I think both of us at like 8:58.
Yeah, you guys are gone really quickly.
Yeah. What's the What Happened brought to us by?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit bccsa.ca.
Okay, so the Canucks had a practice yesterday, and they shook up the lines. So there's three games left before the playoffs, and do you know how I asked the guests, Dogs? Like, I asked Brendan Batchelor, I asked, I think, Randeep. I might have asked Drance about it. I said, do you think the top six as currently constructed is the way they'll go into the playoffs? And most people said, yeah, probably. And that was with Pettersson, with Besser and Hoglander. And that was with JT Miller, with Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. Now, a lot of the discussion we've had on the show is whether or not the Canucks are better to spread out Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland onto the third line. So it gives them a better bottom six. Have you guys been following along on that storyline? You're kind of looking at me with blank stares.
I'm there with you. I'm there with you.
So yesterday, ahead of this huge game against the Edmonton Oilers, there's new practice lines. And it does kind of look like Rick Tocchet could go back to having Garland and Joshua on the third line. Now, it wouldn't be with Teddy Bluger as their center. It would be with Elias Lindholm, who did return the other day in their loss to the Arizona Coyotes and looked pretty good, I will say. Not super dynamic or anything, but solid in a bottom six, more defensive role. So he had Lindholm with Garland and Joshua, and then Pedersen was with Hoglander and Mikheyev. Remember when Mikheyev used to play with Pedersen? Those were good times. So he's back with Elias Pedersen and Nils Hoglander. This is all just at practice, so we don't know if this is definitely going to happen for the Oilers game or anything going forward. And then usually Brock Besser would have been with JT Miller. He had a maintenance day, so Nils Amon essentially filled in for Brock Besser. And then Pugh Suter was with those two. So it strikes me that we are three games before the playoffs, and the Canucks still really don't know what the best deployment of their forwards are.
Isn't that a little worrying to you? Like, would you not want to spend at least the last few games of the season to get your line solid, start building the chemistry, or rekindling the chemistry, if you will? Like, this late into the season, still juggling the lines, I don't know, it makes me nervous.
Like, was the loss against Arizona something that made Rick Tocchet say, well, maybe this isn't going to work? Or is it preparing for Edmonton? Is this something to do with Edmonton and something to do with how to defend the Edmonton Oilers? Or is it something to do with spreading out the offense against a really good Oilers offensive team? Like, to me, this is just, I think this just underscores maybe some of the worries that Canucks fans have heading into the playoffs. And let's use the word uncertainty. Okay, think of all the uncertain things heading into the playoffs. And I guess this, and I get this as part of the excitement of the playoffs. And, you know, I'm not sitting here saying I'm a bundle of nerves heading into the playoffs. I'm actually really excited. I cannot wait for game one at Rogers Arena.
It's going to be awesome.
Against who, though? So that's part of the uncertainty. The Canucks have no idea who they're going to play in the first round. It could be the Nashville Predators. It could be the Vegas Golden Knights. It could be the Los Angeles Kings. So there's uncertainty number one. Uncertainty number two, let's talk about just the forwards in general. So who's going to play with whom? Who's going to be that fifth forward on the first unit power play? Is Connor Garland going to still stick out there? Or is it going to be something that, you know, is Rick Tocchet going to change that again? Could Lindholm get out there again? What is Pedersen going to look like heading into the playoffs? I think we've seen some progress from Elias Pedersen, but I think there's still some, if we're going to use that word again, uncertainty as to what or which Elias Pedersen we're going to get. So the uncertain part so far, it is who the Canucks are going to play, what the forward lines are going to look like, what Elias Pedersen is going to look like, and then probably the biggest one of them all, and I'm looking at Laddie as he takes a big yawn and a stretch, Thatcher Demko, when's he going to play? Is he going to play Saturday? And is he going to be sharp enough heading into the playoffs? Is he going to get enough work heading into the playoffs to be the type of goalie that the Canucks need? Yeah. What are you thinking about Thatcher Demko right now, Laddie?
That's my biggest concern, honestly, is it's not enough runway to really get into a groove before playoff time, because once you get into playoffs, there's no time to waste. Game one, you got to hit your stride and be ready to go, because if you need that little bit of a ramp at the start of the playoffs, then it's not going to look good for the Canucks. They're going to be struggling in their first few games. So I'm concerned that that first game he plays in the regular season doesn't go well. Suddenly there's so much pressure on that next game to go well, because then you need to have that springboard into the playoffs.
And I think they would probably prefer that final game in Winnipeg, they would probably prefer to rest a bunch of guys, leave a bunch of guys home in Vancouver. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it, if they're still fighting for first place in the division, if they need to go out and get a result in Winnipeg.
And if they're still trying to find line chemistry, I mean, do you really want to rest your players in the final game if you're still not sure what the lines are going to be? Like, you want that chemistry. I mean, yeah, you got the third line in the wings. You got the Lotta line if you need it in the wings. So you know you have a couple
the
lines.
The Lotta line isn't something that Tocchet wants to go back to.
I know, but I'm just saying,
despite Telford's best efforts,
you have a couple break glass in case of emergency, like legitimate chemistry lines that you know are there. But other than those two lines, like if you're juggling everything else around you, and then you decide to rest all those guys in the final game, well, you're almost shooting yourself in the foot because the guys need that time to get going. As Laddie says, you don't want to be ramping up in the playoffs. You want to be ramped up and ready to go in game one.
Gary the Atheist texts in, too much tinkering this late in the season. Even with the needing to get Lindholm acclimated again, I don't like where this is going. I think Lindholm is another uncertain category in it itself. You know, we don't know what to expect from Elias Lindholm. He played well in the Arizona game, but I don't think anyone like he had some great penalty killing shifts. He had a couple offensive forays, but remember his first game with the Canucks, he scored two goals and everyone was pretty excited. So he might have just had some juice in the return, but we still don't know what he's going to bring. We still don't know if his wrist injury is going to hold up. So look, this is part of the excitement of the playoffs. There's always going to be uncertainties heading into the playoffs. And maybe it's just like, hey, we don't remember what the playoffs are like
Go
ahead.
Well, I was going to say the intangible of the guys that just flipped the switch in the playoffs that just elevate their games. Like we saw Horvat do it in the bubble. We saw Pettersson do it. We saw D'Amico do it. I mean, is there an element of that that maybe Tocchet realizes and recognizes as somebody that's had much playoff experience that once the guys are in it, his best players will just get that extra gear? Guys like Hughes, Pettersson, Miller, Demko, hopefully. You know, they just flip a switch and become this.
I don't think.
And it's Rick, not something you can bank
Rick,
on, but
I
it's
I don't
this,
think Rick Tocchet believes in flipping the switch.
But you see it, though. Players do that. Like once
you do?
Once the playoffs start, guys elevate their games.
Well, but, I mean,
I just mean
the intensity goes up.
Exactly.
But I don't think that that's something you should count on.
No. It's not something to put all your eggs in. It's not the basket to put all your eggs in. But I'm just saying it is a factor, though. It is something that does happen.
So we're getting a few texts that's supporting the line juggling. Skip in the Ridge texts in, they are juggling the lines because Lindholm hasn't played in 3 weeks and hasn't been healthy in even longer. The offense has been average anyways. Who cares if they switch it up? There is something to that. The offense has been pretty average. But I just thought that after the run that top six got, that Rick Tocchet was like, listen, this is the best combination we got. And when Lindholm comes back, he'll go into the bottom six in some capacity or other. We'll use him on the PK, but this is what we're going with.
Top text from Nick from Poco. I'm driving to the airport to get on a plane to propose to my girlfriend, and I think I'm more nervous about Demko than I am her answer. Godspeed, Nick.
All right.
Hope she doesn't listen to the show.
Let's talk about a little something we saw last night in the NHL. I watched that Red Wings-Penguins game. It's a pretty exciting game, actually. But I was also watching that Red Wings-Penguins game and going like, man, for two teams who are in desperate situations, these guys are sure playing badly defensively. And the Penguins ended up winning 6-5 in overtime, and Sidney Crosby made an incredible play. An incredible play. Like, it wasn't spectacular, it wasn't glitzy glamorous, but it was just a good, solid puck battle. Like, Sid wins those puck battles. He has a terrific pass out in front to Erik Karlsson. Let's play the game winner. From the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-5 win over the Detroit Red Wings.
Crosby's out there. He's got the puck. Karlsson loads up. Shot. Scores! Erik Karlsson, the hero! The Pittsburgh Penguins are back in a playoff spot with an OT winner!
So what that clip won't tell you is that the Penguins actually had a 5-3 lead late in the third period. And the Red Wings battled back. This is a game in Pittsburgh. The Red Wings battled back to tie it at 5. And, you know, everyone in Pittsburgh was like, oh, my God, are we going to have, like, another embarrassing end to the season here with bad losses down the stretch, despite the fact that we've put ourselves in a position to make the playoffs? So, on the one hand, it's great that the Penguins won 6-5, great for them that they won 6-5, but they kind of gave up a point to Detroit, who they're in the race for. And if you're looking at the standings in the Eastern Conference, it's still pretty confusing to tell whether or not this team's going to win or this team's going to make it. The Islanders, with a minus 20 goal differential, look like the most comfortable of all the teams that have been competing for a final playoff spot. But even they didn't make it all that easy on themselves. They needed overtime last night at home to beat Montreal. Like, Montreal could play a major factor in the playoff race down the stretch. They beat the Flyers 9-3 the other day. Rock bottom for the Philadelphia Flyers. And they've also got a couple of games coming up against, I think they finish their Montreal's last two games are both against Detroit. So the Montreal Canadiens could play a big role in who determines or in who makes the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. The Pittsburgh Penguins, with that win, did jump into the second wildcard spot. They're 1 point ahead of the Washington Capitals and 1 point ahead of the Detroit Red Wings. All three of those teams, Pittsburgh, Washington, and Detroit, have played 79 games, so they got three games left to figure out who gets that second wildcard spot. And, you know, I will say that I think of all the three teams, Pittsburgh, Washington, and Detroit, I think Pittsburgh has the best chance to be a team that actually does something in the playoffs. Because let's say that Pittsburgh gets the New York Rangers in the first round. Does anyone have full confidence in the New York Rangers? I know they're going to win the President's Trophy, or they've got a really good shot of winning the President's Trophy, but I feel like there's still some doubt about the New York Rangers. And even the Boston Bruins, first place in the Atlantic Division. Aren't we all just waiting to see how they really do without Patrice Bergeron?
Also, Crosby's just God mode right now. Like, he's elevated, somehow elevated his game even further.
You know, when it comes to the playoffs, a lot of it is, it just, like, people look at the matchups. So you're kind of like, okay, well, I would take Sid against any player on the Rangers. Right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at it that way. Again, like, I think you have to remember, the number one reason that the Penguins aren't in the playoffs is they have a terrible power play. And sometimes as a playoff series progresses, the special teams matter less and less because the referees put the whistles away. Good morning, Mike Halford. How are you?
Hi, everybody. Sorry I let the team down today. Greg.
Mike Halford, hey, everyone.
How's it going, Mike?
Jason Brough. Listeners, I'm sorry I let everyone down today.
But enjoy your extra 50 minutes of sleep?
It was more than that. Let me tell you, it was more than that. It was close to an hour. And I apologize for being late. I listened to the show on the way in. Jason did a remarkable job running through everything that happened at Canucks practice yesterday. And then the Penguins winning yesterday. I heard the audio there from Erik Karlsson's game-winning goal. Really well done running through the playoffs in the East, because with one team holding 86 points and three teams with 85, it is very difficult to navigate, especially when you don't have your coworker with you in the morning.
Are the Islanders, it's crazy that the Islanders are the most comfortable-looking team of all the teams in the Turtle Derby.
Hottest team in hockey. Six wins in a row. They've allowed two goals or less. They've allowed two goals or less to five different opponents, and I guess the bump worked at the end of the day. I suppose the Patrick Waugh hire, if they do make it, worked. Congratulations to Lou Lamoriello. You got exactly what you wanted accomplished, and that was getting into the playoffs by the skin of your teeth, although you did bring up a good point.
They're going to get pumped by Carolina, though. I would absolutely give them, pumped.
I was almost going to jump in with your Penguins assertion where you're talking about how favored are the Rangers going to be in that series? Is anyone really comfortable with the Rangers? I do wonder what the last 2 weeks are going to do in terms of how they're going to dictate the opening round. Because we've seen teams go on heaters in the regular season before and play really meaningful games and carry that momentum over to the playoffs, where a team like, say, the New York Rangers has been coasting for a while. Rangers have lost two in a row. Including that game last night. I don't know if you mentioned or not that Philly won last night to make this thing even more bungled up in the wild card chase in the East. But
I think Philly's done, though.
But yeah, but I was talking more about the Rangers here. Is that the Rangers, you know, they haven't played, and we talk about games of consequence on this show. They haven't played games of consequence in quite a while now. I mean, it could be a matter of they get to the playoffs and it's go time and, you know, they're locked and loaded and ready to go. But if they do draw a team like Pittsburgh, who, think about if they get in. Pittsburgh's 7-0-3 in their last 10, so they haven't lost in regulation in 10 straight games. They've got Sidney Crosby putting together, for him, an all-career year. Like, this has been one of the best scoring seasons of his career. They're relatively healthy. And the thing with the power play is that, and we've talked about this a lot, it should click at some point. It should work. With the wealth of talent that they have available to them,
you
on
know
that
what,
unit,
man?
It
have
should
you,
work.
Have you watched it, though?
It's terrible.
It's awful.
And it's got, like, no confidence.
There's nothing going for it right now. The one thing I will say about the Penguins is that they are slow. They are they get so many rushes where it's like, oh, here's a rush for the Penguins. Oh, wait a minute. They'll need to circle back here because, like, there's no breakaway speed on that team, you know? And I think that in some ways people would be like, well, that shouldn't affect the power play. It does, though, because part of a good power play is getting to loose pucks. And Rick Tocchet talks about this all the time, is like having the foot speed to get to those loose pucks along the boards and keep power plays alive. That's one thing I've seen from the Penguins. They, if there's a loose puck, they typically don't get to it because it's guys like Malkin that are out there trying to get to that loose puck.
I get that part of
and it. The other team's like, well, I'm just going to take this puck and fire it down the ice thing.
Now, here's my counter argument to that is they've got really good guys, and they should be way better on the power play. And I honestly wonder if it'll just be something that'll just click maybe in the playoffs if they get there.
Or even if it just clicks for two games.
Yeah, you really, it doesn't need to be great for an entire series, but they need to score some power play goals. And that'll be really interesting to see. You know what? Now that I'm like back in take and charge mode, can we do the Austin Matthews thing right before the break? Because I was loath to put this in the notes. I was actually hesitant. Toronto. But Austin Matthews scored his 67th and 68th goals of the year last year. Let's play the audio.
One away from nice.
Yeah, it's going to be real nice when he scores number 69. Here's the call on number 68 for Austin Matthews on his quest to 70.
Here's Tyler Bertuzzi. Back to Domi. Takes a look. Benji scores!
Part of this is actually me kind of like doing appreciation in catch-up mode, not the condiment, but in catch-up mode because...
Yeah, because it's called ketchup.
That's right.
It's not called catch-up.
Part of this...
Four-year-olds call it catch-up.
Halford's in catch-up mode.
Put my catch-up on.
Mom, where's the catch-up?
It's Austin Matthews. No, look, this is a pretty remarkable thing that he's done. I was going back and forth and I was wondering last night, does it make any difference to you in terms of most valuable player if he gets... 70 goals, or if he's got the amount of goals that he has. Like, do you
consider... It shouldn't have made a difference for Carlson when he got 100 points for defenseman, but it will. Yeah.
And it did.
It will in some voters' minds. I guarantee there are some voters that are be like, oh, I'll give him the heart if he gets to 70 goals.
There have only been 10...
Like, you're an idiot.
There have only been 10 players, 10 players in NHL history to score 67 in a season, right? He's now moved past Phil Esposito and Lanny McDonald for the greatest single-season scoring... goal scoring records in NHL history. So what he's doing is not just good by the modern era. It's an all-time mark, and getting to 70 will put him in categories of such luminaries as Bernie Nichols. I digress, but yes, you want to
someone texts in, if Matthews gets 70, he's an automatic win for the heart.
No, that's wrong.
I disagree with that, and I also disagree with anyone who has that logic in their thinking. Like, I'm not saying this texter is saying that's what should happen, but if in your mind as a voter, you're like, because what's the difference, honestly, between Matthews getting 70 goals and 69 goals?
One.
Right? It's one goal. Mm-hmm. Should that be enough to sway your vote? Because he got to this plateau that just happens to be a multiple of 10, right? Like it doesn't like you either think like there's something to be said for giving Matthews the heart for sure, right?
That's
like
more
the,
what I was
the most
about.
Goals in the NHL for sure. I just think that Nathan MacKinnon has been so good for Colorado that I would give it to Nathan MacKinnon. That's why this Hart Trophy race has been the most fascinating that I can remember. And normally I don't get too caught up in this, but sometimes there's a two-horse race or a three-horse race. There's a bunch of guys with legitimate cases to be made. I often, it's funny, like I often forget about Kucherov.
Yeah.
Because I'm more focused on the teams around the Canucks, right? Like, you know,
well,
now
we see
Nathan MacKinnon.
Kucherov only has 43 goals.
We see Connor McDavid. We get Auston Matthews and the Leafs, you know, rammed down our throats. And we see that all the time. And Kucherov's doing his thing in Tampa Bay. And, you know, we'll often hear like, and I have to say, it's a bit of a hot take when people say, like, if the Penguins make the playoffs, Sid could win the Hart. Like, no.
No.
Because, like, his level of play just...
He should get some votes.
He'll get some votes. Yeah, absolutely. He'll get some votes for sure. He might even grab a few first place votes from voters around Pittsburgh. But, you know, like, I don't think he should, because as great as he's been and as important as he's been for the Penguins, first of all, the Penguins haven't been that good. If they make the playoffs, it'll be almost because of the lack of quality in that 7, 8, 9, 10 spot in the Eastern Conference. But also, he hasn't reached the level of what a Nathan MacKinnon has done or an Auston Matthews has done or Connor McDavid or Nikita Kucherov. Like, Sid is great. I love Sid. I want the Penguins to make the playoffs. I'll be cheering for Sid. But he's not at that level anymore.
The NHL conversation continues next with Luke Gazdick, former NHLer and now an NHL analyst on Sportsnet. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We're waiting on Luke, is that correct? Oh, we've got him on the line. Terrific. Let's go to the phone lines now. Joins us every week here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Former NHLer, now NHL analyst Luke Gazdick here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Luke. How are you?
Good, guys. How you doing today?
We're well. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We're spending a lot of time talking about your former team, the Edmonton Oilers, as it pertains to the Vancouver Canucks, of course, because that race for top spot in the Pacific Division still very much up for grabs. The Oilers play tonight. They've got Arizona at home. Unsure if Connor McDavid's going to play in that one. Knobloch said he's a game-time decision, but if it was a playoff game, he would certainly be playing. And then, of course, it's the Canucks and Oilers on Hockey Night Canada Saturday night, a very big game. Your thoughts on what the Oilers have to do here, because it's not just these two games back-to-back. They have a very busy schedule over the final week of the regular season.
Yeah, they do. 5 games coming up left for them. It's not incredibly challenging. I don't want to count anybody out. Arizona's been playing spoiler, but AZ twice. They have the Sharks, obviously massive game versus Vancouver on Saturday. And if it, depending on what happens in that game, I really think it comes down to the last game for them on the road in Denver. But honestly, they've been playing really well at home. I know Vegas was missing a number of starters the other night, but they played a really, really good team game without McDavid. Stuart Skinner looks good. And you know what? They're playing a really good brand of hockey. I think it's all kind of based whether Connor will be back in the fold or not. But they've been playing really well at home since the deadline. They're 7-1. They just seem to feel more comfortable on home ice. But the team looks good. They're starting to get some scoring from all over their lineup, and obviously the top guys are going.
Who would be the toughest matchup for them in the first round? of the ones that are possible?
Man, you know what? I don't love LA. I mean, I haven't counted against them all year, but the thing about LA, this is number three. This would be 3 years in a row for Edmonton and LA. And I don't want to say it even out loud, but I feel like at one point LA is going to break through here. Mm-hmm. The way they play, the style of game they play can be very frustrating to play against. I know the Canucks haven't had great luck against them either this year. But I probably lean LA. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens here, because I know you guys know how this is going to lay out, right? If Edmonton wins out, they need a regulation win versus the Canucks on Saturday. But that could change the whole dynamic of this. So, but right now it's looking like LA, and I'm not going to lie, I don't love the matchup.
How would you describe the way that the Kings play? Because there's a lot of people in Vancouver that are very excited for the Canucks to be back in the playoffs, but they don't want the Canucks to play the Kings because they want exciting hockey in the playoffs.
So I played in this style. I played for Todd McClellan, who obviously doesn't coach there anymore, but he set the groundwork for what LA is doing. And my last year in Edmonton, I played for Todd, and it's a very passive 1-3-1. It can change throughout the game, depending on even where the puck is at a certain point in the ice. But for the most part, if you don't have a step on a guy or if you are on the defensive side, you're always sitting back. And so as a winger, for me, I played left wing. You're in that three line in the neutral zone. And it's very passive. And for me, I personally didn't like it. I loved taking the leash off and going forechecking. It was crazy because the year before I played for Todd Nelson, who had taken over halfway through the year. Mm-hmm. He's Calder Cup champion coach in Hershey last year, and he played a 2-1-2. So it was really aggressive, two forwards on the puck. And I went from playing that to playing Todd's style. And I'll tell you, that's my perspective from playing in it, is it can be fairly boring. And one thing about it is you need all five cogs to be going. Like, every single guy needs to be doing their job on the ice in order for it to work. Mm-hmm. It's extremely disciplined. They play the last defenseman very far back. So all they're going to try to do is cut you off, angles in the neutral zone, force you to chip it, and then their D is playing way back. And mm-hmm. then it's transition game. Vancouver's had a challenging time against it this year. It certainly is not fun to watch. You guys know that. Like, it's a good thing they play late. I throw them on to go to bed usually at night because it puts me to sleep. But it works. And it's not like some revolutionary hockey system. It's just, you know, playing the defensive side first. And I think they took a look at that roster and decided that that's the way they wanted to go with the personnel they had, and it's been working for them. But certainly very slow to watch, and having played in it, it's not the system for me.
So how do they set it up positionally? The one, is that the center then?
It doesn't necessarily matter. Usually, so if it's a neutral zone face-off, let's say it's at any of the four dots excluding, or it could be the center too, they'll have a winger that pushes, which is usually mm-hmm. the left side. So the left side will push off a loss, so he steers, and then the left side defenseman just curls up and makes the three line.
Okay.
So that's usually off of stagnant forechecks. It's usually one of the wingers that will push. And then it's basically just dependent on the setup. It depends on who is where, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a center. It can be a winger, but off draws, I think we were pushing right side. So on losses, the D just jumps up. And it's, like I said before, it is something you practice, and it is something that all five guys need to be in tune with each other and need to work as a tandem for it to work. And it works brilliantly when it does. You'll see them. They just sit back, steer, force a dump, and then Doughty is sitting all the way back at the hash marks in his own end. And just, you know, he'll either turn and wheel it straight up, or he'll go for a skate, and it's quick transition. And before you know it, it's in the back of your net.
So how do you beat a 1-3-1?
You skate. you skate. And I don't want to make this sound bad about Vancouver, but I don't know why they haven't figured it out yet, because Quinn Hughes could be a huge cog in that. If you watch Edmonton do it, Draisaitl has started to do it really well. It's skating and it's not dumping the puck in far. It's close chips with support. So as soon as you get over the red line, you can send the puck down if you're getting steered off. But a lot of teams like Edmonton will double swing, so they'll have two guys going with speed. But you can't send the puck all the way down so the goalie's going to play it or the D can play it. You have to send it in that quiet area between the D and the wall of three. Leon has kind of figured it out. Connor loves to skate, and Leon will usually be the guy that, you know, kind of cruises up, soft chip to area, and Connor at full speed is there. I think they have a lot of guys in the Canucks lineup that can do that. Hoglander's one that I could really see them exposing it. The other way is changing sides right away. So instead of doing a same side dump, you just fire a hard rim around, and that basically bypasses everyone, and then you send a winger to the other side. So it's something that's not, you know, it's not unbeatable, and it's something that you have to sit there, definitely watch some video. You got to see it from above. Well, that's one of the things is, you know, you'll play it during a game, and me as a player, I would play it and not exactly understand it if we were trying to play against it. But then you do the video next day and you get the camera angle from above, and then you can see where the areas are. So that's something that in practice you would go over. You'd have, you know, 5-on-5, the other team kind of plays dummies, and you set up how they set up, and you just work on solutions to beat it.
Scoring first, I imagine, would be a big theme in any series against the Kings. How would the system change based on, like, let's say you found yourselves down a goal in the third period. Do you still play that system, or do you completely abandon it because you need to force some things?
If you're LA, we would change a bit, and they do change a bit, where instead of just being more passive, this is even getting like super hockey specific, they'll call it a 1.5. Mm-hmm. So the second guy, if he has a jump or he thinks he can get it, you just play on the more aggressive side.
Right.
Instead of automatically thinking to defense and to being on your heels, you rather have your guys on your toes. Mm-hmm. And they'll make that switch, and they'll make that adjustment usually going into the third. I remember Todd walking in and saying, okay, we need to be a little more aggressive here. That's kind of the way it works, because you basically can't sit back the whole game. They'll start sending guys. They'll start being more aggressive. But what they like to do is send guys high too in transition. So as soon as there's a turnover, their guys are gone. Their wingers are gone. And guys like Kempe and Trevor Moore, who has been outstanding this year, even the new Akil Thomas loves to fly as well. They'll just send their wingers to speed. So a team like Vancouver has to be super aware of them sending guys in behind them.
So what do you think the Kings think about playing that system? Like, I was just thinking in my head, boy, as a beer league winger, I love that system. I don't have to forecheck. Awesome. That's exhausting forechecking. But like, if I'm a highly paid professional athlete that loves to get in on the forecheck because that's how I got to the NHL, I don't know how much I love that system.
I think they take a lot of pride in it. I know Drew Doughty had that quote the other day about, you know, getting guys were frustrated about it, but I think it's, people talk about it, like I said earlier, about it being like this revolutionary kind of system and everyone's having trouble with it, but these are the best players in the world and the best coaches in the world. You should be able to watch pre-scout on them, watch clips from their last five games, go out and practice that day or a couple days before, and you should be able to execute. It's not something, like I said, that's unbeatable, but I think they take a lot of pride in playing that way. And LA just gives me the sense of a team that is, I was just going to say, a team that is a team, like a team that really leaves their egos at the door. And I'm going to float this conversation back to Pierre-Luc Dubois, and earlier in the year when Drew Doughty, again, who was very outspoken, was saying that guys are more focused on points in this dressing room. And that spoke a lot, because he never talked like that in previous years. And what changes did you have on the team this year? Who did you bring in? Like, there's a common denominator there. But it just seems like a team where you drop your ego at the door, and no matter what you have to do for the team to be successful, they do it. So whether that's a guy scoring five less goals a year, he's okay with doing it because he knows that the system works and he knows that they'll be in the playoffs if they play this way. And once you get in, anything can happen.
That probably goes back to Daryl Sutter coaching them, because I remember Drew Doughty having quotes like that before, or even Daryl Sutter. I think he threw Brian Campbell under the bus once when he was like, you know, like, you can have lots of points as a defenseman, and then, you know, what are you if you're not playing defense? And then he was like, oh, you're Brian Campbell, who's playing in Florida. And Campbell was like, wait, what did I do? But Drew Doughty, I think, you know, bought into that way of, you know, I could go out there and I could pile up points if I played a certain way, but I want to win a Stanley Cup. And the Kings did win a couple of Stanley Cups under Daryl Sutter. So you've got those leaders on the team like Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar who know that sometimes you have to sacrifice your individual point totals for winning a Stanley Cup. Do you find that that's typically like a common denominator of the teams that win the Stanley Cup? Like, they will have that. Like, how do you become a team like that?
I think you're right in saying that Sutter probably still has some lingering influence there. I think it starts from the top. And, you know, we've talked about Drew Doughty. You just mentioned him. Heck, he's leading the NHL in ice time for any player. He's playing 25-48 a night, which is insane. I don't want to say he's old at his age. We're the same age, but it's impressive to be doing this at that point in your career. But for me, it's Kopitar too. And I've had the chance to work with Justin Williams on the Monday Night Hockey panel now for a while, and hearing him talk about Kopi behind closed doors and even on the camera, we did their game versus Vancouver a couple weeks back and spoke on him and did the talk back interview. And then I just got to listen to Justin talk about him as a player and as a person and how much influence he has there. And basically, you know, what he says goes. And a little more quiet, but everyone kind of just jumps on board. And man, he was the guy for me. I tried not to get starstruck very often because at the end of the day, I was playing in the NHL and I didn't want to be intimidated by these guys. But there were a few where in warm up, you know, I used to stretch at the red line every time to do my little intimidating thing, right? You know, try to let the team know I'm there. And Kopitar was one of those guys who did a wheel by me and I was just like, holy crap, like, that's Anze Kopitar. And he was way bigger than I thought, too. I have to say that. He's just an absolute unit.
Yeah, he's big.
Like, I just remember being like, this guy's as big as me. Like, this is insane that he's doing that at that size. But hearing Willie talk about him and watching the way he carries himself, I think the influence starts there. And he is a huge, huge factor in the way that team plays. And yes, they have a bunch of youth that's coming up now. But I think it still starts and ends with guys like Kopi and Doughty and even Trevor Lewis, who's back there and won twice with them as well. So it always starts with your vets in the locker room.
Hey, Luke, who's your pick right now for the Hart Trophy?
Oh, man. I'm giving it to Nate right now.
Yeah, us too. I think we're all on Nate's side, I think.
I mean, I watched the game on Sunday versus Minnesota. He's a man on a mission. I think he's partially going to – I don't want to say the sympathy vote from the Hart voters, but I think he is going to get some of that he's never – he's been around it before, but he's never won. I'm not going to lie. It's not just because I live in Toronto, but I'm starting to fall on the Matthews train. Like, it is overly impressive what he's doing in terms of goal scoring. I thought Connor was there for a while, but I think just even being injured for a couple games might take him out of it. And I just am not sold on Cooch. He has, I think, 53 points more than the next guy on his team now, which is insane. But you factor in all these things, the empty net points and secondary apples, and he's only a +6 and all this other stuff. I just think from start to finish, what Nate has done in Colorado has been just so overly impressive. And he's just such a dominant factor in every game that I watch the Avs play. I know Makar's there and Rantanen's been outstanding, but this guy can do it on his own, and I think he deserves it.
What's it like being on the ice with guys that can skate like MacKinnon and Connor McDavid and Quinn Hughes and all these these incredible skaters? Like what MacKinnon was doing the other night, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone skate like that in the NHL. Well, I mean, I have, because I've seen Connor McDavid skate.
Well, I'll tell you what, if as long as our coach had our matchups, I wasn't on the ice against him very much. But every now and then you did get caught out against him, right? And you got to do a job. I'll never forget my first game in Denver. And I think I was finishing a change, but it wasn't a very long shift because they had sent Nate's line out. And so I couldn't just sprint off the ice. And I went at Nate full speed in front of the Avs bench. Full speed, and he was stopped, full stopped. He was not moving, and he reverse hit me, and I'm 6'4". I played at about 230, 235, and I went straight down to the ice. Like he sent me down so fast, and I lost my wind. We're already in Denver, so I couldn't breathe already. And I just remember I was right in front of the bench, so I took three steps to the bench, and I just remember sitting there just being like, holy, like that was hard. That was a hard hit. But you see, Nate and Connor are different. So I get to practice with Connor every single day. So it's not like I'm taking him out of this. It's just I almost got used to it. Connor would do stuff in practice that people didn't get to see, right? You see him in games. But I saw him do things like that on a daily basis. And for him, it's the edge work, the crossovers, his ability to handle the puck while his eyes are still up, and do everything at top speed. Nate is just so powerful. And when you see him start to gallop, I guess we'll call it, because it's not even a crossover, it's like a full gallop, and he starts to get going, when I'm sitting there on the bench at ice level, it is, there's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And he's just so strong on his feet, so dominating, so powerful, and sometimes I found myself just watching. I think that was like the coolest thing about playing in the NHL, to be honest, was I had the best seats in the building. I know I self-deprecate sometimes, but when I played, you know, 5-6 minutes a night and it's a 1-1 game in Colorado, I'm not playing, right? So I get to sit there and I have the best seats in the house to watch Connor and Nate go head-to-head. And it was some of the funnest memories of my career was getting to watch some of those top guys, you know, in pressure games, third periods, going for the win. It's pretty cool stuff.
Another great chat, Luke. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll chat more as the playoffs are coming up real soon. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with all these teams we're talking about.
Yes, sir. Big one Saturday. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, anytime. Luke.
Thanks, Luke. That's Luke Gazdick, former NHLer, now Sportsnet NHL analyst here on the Halpern and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
That must actually be pretty fun if you're one of those players that's like not going to see the ice in the final 5 minutes. You're like, wow, these are great seats.
Yeah, give me some popcorn. I don't have to worry about anything.
You should have tried scalping these.
Yeah, you
this
go
is
up
awesome.
And try and hit Nate MacKinnon. He's like, gives you a reverse hit, and while you're going to the ice, you're like, can I get your autograph?
Yeah. So he's on.
That was amazing.
This has been a lot of fun, sir.
This was amazing.
So he's on board with Nate Dogg as MVP too.
Yeah.
And if I still had a vote, if it wasn't coldly and callously ripped away from me from Frank Saravalli and the Professional Hockey Writers Association, I would have a tough time. I would have a very tough time with it, because the one stat that jumps out to me in terms of most valuable is the fact that Nikita Kucherov is like 50 points clear mm-hmm. of the second leading scorer on his team. To me, that is the statistic that's most indicative of most valuable.
Yeah.
That you're that far ahead and you're not on a bad team. You're on a playoff-bound team. But don't get me wrong. I've got plenty of time and reason to argue for MacKinnon to be the Hart Trophy winner. You know what? This isn't just me putting it on for the show. I genuinely have no idea how it's going to go. This is the most perplexing, confusing, deep, and interesting Hart Trophy race of all time. Because I would say there's five guys that probably could get first place votes. Mm-hmm. Maybe not necessarily deserve them. But Kucherov, McDavid, MacKinnon, Matthews, and I will say Sidney Crosby, I bet they all end up getting like first and second place votes.
Yeah.
And that's kind
of
unheard
of. Well, if the Penguins make the playoffs.
Which
if
I
not,
think they're going to do.
Yeah.
They got the vibes going on right now.
You know what, though? I just don't trust the Penguins. Which is crazy to say, but watching them last night blow that 2-goal lead against Detroit, you're kind of like, man, like you can't do that at home.
So I know
you can't
I know we're up against overtime. Nothing about the Penguins really makes sense. Like I was watching that game and Jeff Carter is scoring shorthanded breakaway goals. Jeff Carter's like 65 years old. He's the same age as Bruff. And I'm looking at him and I'm like, how is he doing this? And they get out to these huge leads and they look great for 5 or 6 minute stretches. And then like the goals that they gave up to Detroit, for blowing a 5-3 lead in the third period at home, they weren't even like greasy grinding goals. They were giving up like clear-cut breakaways to the Red Wings. Like they just completely lose the plot or collapse defensively. But, you know, at the end of the day, they're 7-0-3 in their last 10, so they're getting it done, but they're shaky. They're a shaky hockey
team. One thing they showed against Detroit, I think, was their lack of speed, because Detroit has plenty of speed.
Slow.
They've got like the young legs, right?
And that's why Jeff Carter going on a breakaway was so hilarious.
I was like, how'd he get there?
Yeah, it evolved not in real time, in slow time.
Okay, we go to an open segment on the other side. First, we're going to talk to AJ from AJ's Pizza, but be sure to text into the Dunbar Lumber text line 650-650. The best Ask Us Anything, and you got to use a pizza emoji here, the best Ask Us Anything is entered into the contest for a $100 gift card from AJ's Pizza. So let's get some good Ask Us Anythings into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.